Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
"I found nirvana! I win!"
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Kind of a gloomy day. Probably going to get a lot of rain here in our area. We are practicing social distancing here, day two. I'm here in my house. Willie's over on the east side. Chase is on the west side. Elijah Campbell back at our game studios, our Wholesale Inc. game studios, powered by Rumble On. Guys, how you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's new and exciting?
A lot of video game action at my house. That's what's been happening.
I think the Predators went 2-0 last night. One on the radio, one on TV. Is that right?
They did.
I'm
not going to lie. I listened. I watched and I listened, but at different points, obviously, because they were different games. But I had a lot of fun listening to Brent Peterson and Pete Weber and hearing some names that I haven't heard in a while for the Predators, even though that was just a few years ago.
Yeah, I did both. I listened and watched. If I'm being perfectly honest, the television side of things was a little bit more painful because it was this year, and at times it was a little depressing watching the Capitals game because that was this year. On the radio side, that was like fond memories, and yes, while the Capitals game was great, I just found myself going, that's this season, and it became a little depressing for me, but I forged on. Powered through, as they say. But, I definitely checked out both, and it was a lot of fun. And I know there's more to come. I know we're going to have one on Saturday, Chase. What's the next installment? Is it the closing of the book of the Chicago Blackhawks? Is that right?
Yeah. Saturday is games 1-4 in condensed form. So that'll be a lot of fun because you were in Chicago. You both were and didn't hear Chelsea's Dagger one time. Yeah. So.
Pretty amazing. Can you imagine the odds on that bet I would have taken? I mean, or I wouldn't have done it, but can you imagine the odds you could have got on that?
Oh, goodness. I know.
Well, do we need to go down memory lane and remember the ESPN.com 15 writers predicting the series? Forget about the sweep, just predicting the series, and 0-15. Remember Nash's reaction on Twitter?
You're right.
Not one person of the 15 writers predicted the Predators to win the series.
Right. Well, you know, Chicago was the one seed. Nashville was the last team to get into the playoffs, and Chicago had won 3 of the last 6 cups. So, I mean, you could kind of understand, but that's why, once again, that's why we keep saying that's why we love Stanley Cup playoffs, right? It's just the uncertainty. It's so hard to predict. It's incredibly hard, and that's a prime example. There is no one on the planet. While this show predicted that the Predators would win, there was no one on the planet that predicted a sweep. I mean, no one. Does anybody remember the score of the first game?
The first game was 1-0 or 2-1?
Wasn't it 1-0?
Willie, it couldn't have been 2-1. We just said that they shut
them
out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so 1-0. Yeah, 1-0. Arvey scored right at the beginning of the game.
That's right. That's exactly right. Victor Arvey had a goal about halfway through the first period?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was early.
And then game two was, there were some names that you haven't heard in a while, but right. Some unsung heroes.
Harry Z had his moment in game two. You know what was funny last night in thinking back, because we're looking ahead to what's coming on the radio, which I think is going to be fun. We've had a lot of requests from the people who were watching the game last night, watching the broadcast, hey, can we show some of those games from 2017? What people may not remember is other than three of the four games against Chicago, Fox Sports Tennessee didn't have the telecast.
That's right. That's exactly right.
NBC had game two, and
that's
then everything else after round one is NBC. So we can't show those on Fox Sports Tennessee, unfortunately.
Yeah, so going back to that second game. So the second game was 5-0, but here was the significance of that. Do you remember who had the game-winning goal? Of course, if it was 5-0, it was the first goal of the game. And what blew us all away, or at least I'll speak for myself, what blew me away was what was the significance of that goal. Do you know, have any idea what I'm talking about? Who had the first goal of the game in the first period?
If I remember, I think it was Ryan Ellis.
It was indeed Ryan Ellis. Now, why would I be bringing this up? Why would I be blown away by a Ryan Ellis goal in the playoffs? You remember?
I don't remember. I know you're going somewhere.
Because we were
this,
like, but how in the world can that be true? It was his first playoff goal.
First
time he ever had a goal in the playoffs. Yeah, we were like, that can't be right. There's no way that's right. Yeah. It was his first, I remember it was his first playoff goal.
Wow.
Of course, it was a big one. It was the game winner. But it was like, how in the world can that be Ryan Ellis' first playoff goal? Remember, it's a team that had been going to the playoffs. It's not like, you know, it was his first trip to the playoffs. Yeah, first time he'd ever scored in the playoffs. Hmm. And it was a big one. And as you mentioned, Harry Z had the second one. I believe the last goal of the game, not that they needed it at this point, it was well over. But I think Kevin Fiala is the one who finished off the night at the United Center. Of course, half the fans were gone by then.
A rare sight in Chicago.
That was Fiala's first playoff goal, too. I remember Ellis and Fiala had their first
that makes sense,
playoff goals. Right, exactly.
Young
he
player.
Was super young back then. And so the Fiala thing made sense. Ryan Ellis, it was a head-scratcher. Like, how could that possibly be? But, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Memory lane. Well, see, it's a little bit memory lane. This year it was tough. It was like, it was hard to sit there and watch, and as we sit here in March, you know, a game from this year and know that we're watching it from home. That was probably the tough part for me.
Well, two points that I thought were uplifting from last night or fun from last night. Pete Weber pointed this out. If you were doing a little bit of both, like we all were, listening to some of the broadcasts from the 2016 game against the Sharks, the triple overtime game, and watching some of the broadcasts, they both ended in similar fashion, right? Mattias Ekholm starts both game-winning plays with a shot from the point. His shot causes the rebound that Mike Fisher puts in, right? And then Mattias Ekholm's shot is the game-winning shot in the game against the Capitals. So Pete pointed that out on Twitter. And they both happened roughly around the same time of night last night. both broadcasts ended almost in the same way, almost the same time of the night. But the other thing that I thought was important is it reminded you how much you love being together at a game, in this case, Smashville, right? Just the rises of the crowd, the specialness of the crowd when it's going like that. You know, it's sad, it's bittersweet that we miss it, but it's also motivation of, you know, the quicker we do all these things, the quicker we'll be back doing that. We will be back, right, someday, hopefully sooner than later.
No doubt.
That's the hope. I'm watching, like, right now, you know, we I think we go through this every day. What are we watching? We got, obviously, First Take on, so I got that on, but then on the other TV, some classic NASCAR. So that's where I'm at right now.
Some classic NASCAR.
Yep. It's not that old. I mean, it's like a few years, but FS1's going to televise a video game race that the NASCAR drivers are participating in this weekend.
That is becoming something that more and more people around sports are starting to do is simulation, right? What's the next best thing? You can't have the real thing, so you go to simulation. I think people are looking into that.
You can bet on NBA 2K.
Yeah, and I think the Capitals are doing some kind of simulation. The Wizards are as well out of Washington. Yep. So I'm not sure how you work that, but, you know, like, do you send your best video game person to represent the team? Like, how does the simulation work? Or you just let it – you plug the numbers into a computer and you go? Is that how it works?
Well, I mean, I guess it's a video game. Like, it's NBA 2K is an actual game. The NASCAR thing.
Well, I'm sure there's different ways to do it, right? There's like,
yeah,
that's one
yeah.
way is a video game sort of contest. You know, me versus you, mano a mano, with the teams, and then I think there's another kind of simulation where you run the numbers, and the computer simulates how the game could turn out, or you run it 10 times and see right. how many times each team wins. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there are things you can do with that too. But I think it's funny that some of the NBA players have been going up, you know, because a lot of them are younger, and so they have Xbox or PlayStation or something like that, and they all play online, whether it's Call of Duty or the sports games, and so you've had some NBA players playing against each other, and doing actual games that were supposed to be taking place. I know NHL, you could do the same thing. So it's unique to see how people are passing the time, and then like I said with NASCAR. NASCAR has actually sanctioned a series. They're calling it like the Pro the iRacing Pro Invitational Series or something like that. iRacing is a website that a lot of race fans and drivers all compete on, and they obviously have different levels, and you can paint your car and go to actual tracks. And so Sunday they're going to go to Homestead, which is where they're supposed to be this weekend, and the Cup drivers are going to, and some of the Xfinity and Truck Series drivers are all going to mix and mingle and race against each other. And Fox FS1 is going to televise it.
Wow. It's a great idea.
Pretty cool. We'll continue to pass along the Pratt stuff when we get close, and so you are reminded. So let's, again, go over the schedule for this weekend as we sit here on this Friday morning. Let's start on the radio side because that'll be first up. You're saying a condensed version, but tomorrow starting when, Chase?
I am
the Blackhawks
pulling
series?
It up. Yeah, so it's going to be that series, games 1 through 4 of the Blackhawks series. It will start at 1 o'clock on ESPN 102.5 The Game, go all the way up till 7. So,
wow.
All day. We will carry all 4 games, and they are condensed down. And then your next opportunity will be on Sunday. You will hear games 1, 3, 5, and 6 versus Anaheim from the Western Conference Final starting at 1 o'clock, and that'll go until 6 o'clock on Sunday. So two series from that magical run where they went to the Stanley Cup Final. So you can check those out this weekend.
If you want to hear some great radio coverage, there you go, Saturday and Sunday, and some great memories on the Predator side. Just tune into 102.5 The Game over the weekend. Willie, over on the Fox Sports Tennessee side, your next game, I believe, is going to be Sunday night at 7 o'clock, the Preds and Coyotes game from, I guess, the last game before the Christmas break?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that is correct. Sunday at 7 o'clock, it is the game against Arizona. The team came back home, if you recall, after an excellent road trip to New York and Boston with Ottawa in between, and then they came back home for the one game before Christmas and got a big win over Arizona. And think about how big that win is now, where the season stopped, right? Because they're barely ahead of Arizona in the standings. So that was a nice win. So that's coming up on Sunday night.
That's right. Chase, you were not there, I know, but I'll start with you before we go to Richard Deitch. That coverage on Sunday on 102.5 The Game, do you remember who had the overtime game winner in Anaheim, the Western Conference Final?
Was that Pontus Aberg?
Nope. He had a big goal in game 5.
Yeah, it was not game one.
To bring the series back to
game
in fact,
one.
I think he had the game-winning goal in game 5 after Ryan Johansson and Mike Fisher were hurt. Remember, they went out with that depleted lineup. We were on the plane going, wait a minute, where's Ryan Johansson?
I'll give you a hint. We just ran into him recently. We literally just ran into him.
He's changed addresses a couple of times, Chase, since that moment.
We just ran into him?
Yep, at Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah,
still owns a residence here.
Oh, James Neal.
Yeah.
Yes.
James Neal. Okay.
Remember? He was didn't That's play. Right.
The real deal.
Didn't play in the Edmonton game, but we ran into him going to the elevators. He was just walking around in a really
right.
nice suit in Bridgestone Arena. So James
He was
Neal.
Just wandering around. We saw
just,
him
right,
in the most
during
random
the game,
places.
Just wandering around by himself in a suit, really nicely dressed, and was like
He knew his way around.
He did. Well, I mean, I don't know that he, like, how did he know his way around? He was always on the ice. Like, how did he know where he was going. He was walking all over the place. It was great. Yeah, James Neal had the game winner in OT in that game one in the Western Conference Final. All right, we'll come back. Richard Deitch from The Athletic. We'll check in with him and find out what's new in his world up in Toronto and what's new on The Athletic. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. On Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, that's me. I'm the south side of town here in Rutherford County. Willie Donick is over on the east side of town in East Nashville, and Chase McCabe over on the west side, representing in Bellevue. Elijah Campbell holding the fort down at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by Rumble On. Let's say hello and good morning to Richard Deitch from The Athletic and find out what's happening in his world. It's been a couple weeks since we've checked in with Richard. Richard, how you doing? Richard, are you there? I heard something. I heard the shh, there's rustling.
See, there it is again.
We're not having any luck.
Maybe put him on hold.
Hello?
And check with.
There we go. Uh-oh, wait a minute. We just heard something.
Hey, yeah, hey.
What's up, Richard, guys?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are
okay.
you?
Okay. How's everything going? Considering.
Well, I'm in the dates sort of like start going floating through your head. I think I'm in day 9 of self-quarantine at the moment because when I returned to Toronto, the per the government of Canada, and smartly so, they asked anybody who had traveled abroad to self-quarantine for 14 days. I also had traveled to, which at the time Canada had designated one of the three hotspots, California, New York, or Washington State. I think actually since then, obviously the borders have shut, but even before that, Canada at a certain point designated if you traveled anywhere outside of its borders to self-quarantine. So like probably millions of people around the globe, I am currently in self-quarantine to get past the 14-day mark at least. I don't believe I was exposed to anybody in New York to coronavirus, but the reality of this virus is you don't know. There's a lot of asymptomatic people out there who are probably carriers. And so yeah, it's been a very weird time, just some – As it is, I'm sure, for you guys in Tennessee.
No doubt about it. So the only way to go to Canada right now is if you are a full-time resident. Is that correct? Or how's that working at the border right now?
Yeah, I love the fact that you're now considering me the prime minister of the country. I'll take that promotion.
It pays well,
yeah,
I'm sure.
At the moment, I apologize if I'm incorrect about this, but I believe at the moment the only people who are allowed to cross over the border would have to do with trade between the two countries. Mm-hmm. So some kind of designated trade route, whatever that would mean. I'm not sure that means trucks or planes, but it means something. So that's part one, and then I believe part two is any Canadians abroad can still be brought back to the country at the moment, although I can't tell you exactly like sort of where and how that exists. But yes, essentially at this point, there is no commercial travel coming in to Canada from anywhere. So the border is sort of ostensibly closed at the moment, at least to, you know, what we would normally consider commercial travel.
Yeah. We had Elliot Friedman on the show yesterday, and
oh, nice.
We said that we will forever always remember when everything shut down in the sports world in this market because, ironically, both teams, two of the three professional sports teams, which are happen to be in their seasons, were set to play in Toronto, where you live. Of course, the Predators were set to play the Leafs. And the new MLS team, Nashville SC, was going to play their third game ever in their MLS inaugural season in Toronto. So that's when everything came to a screeching halt. It'll be easy to remember that here in this market because both teams were set to be playing up where you are.
Let me just point out something for your listeners that I personally find interesting. So I looked at your the guest list coming up after me. You guys have Trey Wingo and Linda Cohn, obviously good guests, and myself. I mean, can you get a more dramatic difference when it comes to salary and net income from the 10:15 mark to the 1 p.m. mark? So that for your listeners, I mean, you're going to be heading up the financial chain as the guest list heads down.
Well, in all seriousness, we have Trey and Linda on a lot, but I'm sure you've seen what Barrett Sports Media put out there, the Sports Center, you know, anchors, greatest anchors tournament, and we were just basically going to probe Trey and see if he felt like he was worthy of a 7 seed, if he feels slighted. Linda Cohn was given a 2 seed. I don't know if you've seen the bracket or not and how you feel about it, but we were going to have a little fun with that.
Nice. So you get to see one of the things that I think will this pandemic will amplify is the creativity among people in the sports media. So whether it's you guys or whether it's The Athletic or ESPN, you know, there's no live sports at the moment, so you have to really sort of come up with creative things to do. Again, I'm not saying that this is some kind of genius idea, but in thinking like this week, okay, what am I going to write with Tom Brady heading to the Bucks? You know, The Athletic has 500,000 football people to sort of dissect what that means. So I contacted 11 members of the Patriots media to ask them what advice they would give on covering Tom Brady to the Tampa Bay media and how Brady was as an interview subject. Again, I'm not saying this idea goes down in the Hall of Fame of ideas, but this will be sort of a test for all of us in the business in terms of how can we continue to provide sort of interesting, entertaining, and creative ideas, given that live sports is there. I also think, and I mean this sincerely, because obviously I'm on the radio in Toronto, you guys are there in Nashville. Radio/audio plays a really important part in what's going on now, because I think I've always thought the medium is sort of very much a comfort medium. There's something very soothing and relaxing about hearing somebody, as opposed to sort of seeing the visuals on television. So I don't know if the numbers are going to go up or down, but I do think, at least anecdotally from what I've heard from people, at least in Toronto, they really appreciate that we're on the air, because it gives them something, it gives them at least a little bit of escapism from what is a pretty awful reality.
Yeah, well said.
Richard Deitch is with us from The Athletic. And, Richard, before we go any further, our thoughts are to you. I know you've been pretty public about it. Your mom passed away here recently, and you shared a lot of your thoughts and things like that. So we just want to pass along our well wishes to your family as you go through this.
Yeah, it's very nice. I will, you know, I think what day are we on today here? So my mom passed away roughly 2 weeks ago. And I have to be honest, I mean, it's kind of a surreal thing to think about. But had she passed away, like literally 7 days later, I don't know if I would have been able to go to the funeral and to be able to go back to her house with my brothers and sisters and sort of just try to get things in order and, you know, host people who wanted to come and pay their respects, because we literally got back to Canada about 6 days before essentially it became just about impossible to travel. And so, you know, it makes me think of, and I guarantee so many Americans are sort of dealing with this now, it makes me think of so many people who cannot get to their elderly parents or elderly relatives, particularly in another state or far away because of this. It's like an excruciating decision. I mean, you should social distance. You absolutely should quarantine. I mean, with all respect to people who are saying otherwise, I think their fear monger is talk to any hospital person, this is a real thing. But it really kills me just to think that people cannot get to their elderly parents. And if there's any, I wouldn't call it a silver lining because it sounds so odd, but if there's anything I am thankful for, it's honestly just that my mom passed away the week she did, because had she passed away a week later, I'm not sure actually I wouldn't be able to go.
You bring up a really good point. I have a buddy here in town who owns several UPS stores, and I just checked in with him just the other day. And to your point, I said, how's everything going? He's a small business owner. We have concerns about people who have small businesses. These are rough times for them. And he said, actually, things are pretty hectic. Business is actually really good. And I said, really? And he pointed out exactly what you said. Right now, people can't go visit their loved ones. They've got parents or grandparents that are older, and they cannot go visit them or go see them. And so they are sending them things. And I had never really thought about it until he said that. And, of course, you just reiterated that point.
Yeah, it's well said. You know, the other thing, too, is, and again, you know, small things, but important things. In 2020, the ability to stay in contact with people is extraordinarily different than it was when all of us were kids. Like, the fact alone, something like FaceTime exists, or some kind of video conferencing, where you can literally see the person you want to talk to. It's just immeasurably game-changing, just emotionally and mentally and everything else. You know, if this happens in, like, 1987, let's say, you know, you're trying to keep in touch with people by phone. You have just think exponentially of what you can't do. You can't use apps and stuff to order groceries or food. You can't stay – you probably cannot – visibly see the persons you would like to see via the technology that exists. You know, it's just exponentially on and on and on and on and on. So at least, you know, we are in an era at least where one, more people can work from home. I'm not saying, you know, in terms of the restaurant business or service or retail, that's not the case, but you know, we are fortunate in a sense that we do live in a year and an era where technology will help us. But that said, I think all of us will look back, knock on wood, this eventually passes 25, 30, 35 years from now. This will be one of the signature moments of our life, the way the Kennedy assassination was for people of that era and 9/11 was for people of that era.
Richard, one of the things that I think you've done in some of your writings is to illustrate what some real people are going through, and including John Forslund, a colleague that we've had on the show. I cross paths with him a lot, as you can imagine, and what he's going through is quite unique right now. And I really like how he's represented what's going on with him, even though, knock on wood, he's going to be fine, and he is symptom free, I guess, as we speak right now. But what an amazing story! But it kind of dawns on you that as you read his story, It could have been anybody, right? It could be any one of us that happens to cross paths with somebody who unfortunately has the virus. That's how quick it spreads. But tell us your conversation with him.
Yeah, well, I mean, John Forslund, just in the sort of randomness of life, happened to check into a hotel room in Dallas after Rudy Gobert. Literally, he was in Rudy Gobert's hotel room. When I talked to him a couple of days ago, he was not showing symptoms. He was asymptomatic. And, you know, the Hurricanes believe that the hotel room had been sterilized and you know, clean. But, I mean, listen, impossible to know. I don't know enough about the virus, but it seems if you just read enough that it can stay on surfaces for a couple days. And so, you know, John Forslund, doing his sort of due diligence and I think doing something for his community, decided I got to go in and I got to self-isolate. And so, you know, when I checked in with him on whatever it was, day four or five, he was lucky enough to have a sort of home basement set up where he had a bedroom down there and television and internet and exercise equipment. And he was going to do he was quarantining for 14 days. And for him, it was really, really hard because he self-admittedly doesn't have any hobbies other than hockey. And he's not sure what to do with himself. He actually told me he was struggling more mentally than physically, for sure, because he was trying to figure out sort of what he can do. And he hears his family living above him, and that's very, very tough. The one thing about Forslund, and I should check in with him because I haven't talked to him in a couple of days, but the thing I really appreciate about him, and I don't think, let me sort of check that. I don't want to make any larger pronouncements. I'll just sort of specific it to him. The thing I really appreciate about him is he has a large sense of sort of community and sort of publicness in that he wasn't going to use his connections to get a test because he was respectful of the fact that there's clearly a test shortage. And when I talked to him, he had not been tested, even though as the Hurricanes broadcaster and as someone who's, you know, a very sort of public figure in Carolina, the guy had access to doctors who could easily have gotten tested, for sure. So that's something I just really appreciate, a guy who had no symptoms and recognize, like, sort of beyond him, like, hey, I'm not going to take a test from somebody who really, really may need it, at least until, you know, I get some kind of symptoms that would, that would sort of prompt me to get the test. So I didn't know him much before talking to him on the phone. He seems like a really, really stand-up guy. As a hockey broadcaster, obviously, he's excellent. And the Hurricanes are lucky to have basically a national guy calling their games.
We're talking to Richard Deitch from The Athletic, the media circus. And one thing that I wanted to bring up with you is we talked about this to start the show, that you have the sports networks that are getting creative this time of year. And one thing that NASCAR has done is a lot of these drivers participate in online racing and do that as a hobby, but they've actually now formed an invitational series, and they're going to race at the tracks that they should be going to, and FS1 is actually going to show it with their normal broadcast team of Mike Joy, Jeff Gordon, and Larry McReynolds on the call. What do you think about that idea of showing actual drivers racing each other in a video game?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think it's creative and different. I don't think Fox should expect big viewership for this. The thing about e-viewing at this point is, while it's obviously had massive interest on places like Twitch and online forums, it has not yet proven to be like what we call linear television, traditional television, ESPN, CBS, et cetera. It hasn't proven to be any kind of viewership success there. But I think that's kind of a cool thing. You have to get creative with your programming decisions during this time for as long as it lasts. I love the fact that CBS decided this weekend to show all the greatest games in the history of the NCAA tournament. They're in a very fortunate position where they own that content. For places like ESPN, it's not so easy. They don't. They actually own less games than you might think. But CBS lock stock has had a contract with the NCAA, for whatever it's been, 30, 40 years. They have the rights to re-air those games. And so I thought that was an awesome decision. So, on Saturday, I don't have it in front of me, but I did tweet it out. I know like the Michael Jordan's game-winning shot, I think it was 83 or 82 in the NCAA championship. They're playing that. They're playing the Kentucky-Duke game, the Eastern regional final, basically considered perhaps the greatest NCAA game in history, which is the Leitner shot. So I love that. Like, that to me is like really cool. And they're going to do six games over the course of Saturday and Sunday. And you have to do that. I mean, ESPN sort of doing their Ocho thing again, where you're seeing all these oddball things coming on. I think that's smart. You got to try to be as creative as possible. And then if you're all these networks, just like if you're us, you pray like you get a Tom Brady kind of thing, and that could carry you for the week. I mean, I can guarantee Toronto radio has never talked more about a Tampa Bay Bucks quarterback than they have this week.
Well, just to pass along, because we did do this yesterday, this is going to be aired on CBS. The other game, Richard, sandwiched in between those two. This is on Saturday. The other game is going to be the national championship game in 83. You referenced the 82 one. NC State, Houston is going to be the one sandwiched in between Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, Georgetown. On Sunday, it's going to be the national championship game in 08, Memphis and Kansas, the overtime thriller. And then the game following that will be last year's national championship game. And then the final game on Sunday will be 2016 Villanova and North Carolina. So those are...
Yeah, and they're doing... By the way, can you... I mean, this is sort of an old school thought, but like, can you believe a college basketball team with Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler actually lost the game?
I know.
Unbelievable to think about.
I know. It doesn't fare well for
guys.
They
had some other guys who were pretty good, too.
Yes, yeah. That's a very good point on that. But like... I love that stuff. And I haven't seen, I think the American public hasn't seen that in a long time. So as like a sports media ratings nerd, I'll be curious to see what kind of viewership or what kind of tune in gets. I will just tell you guys, just again, from sort of being part of this world, the cable news numbers are percentages up like 50, 60, 70%. And they're dwarfing, not surprisingly, the sports networks. So ESPN and Fox Sports 1, NBC Sports Network, all those networks are way, way down. People are just basically consumed by news right now.
Chase, you got another one? You done?
Yeah, real quick, Richard, because we're the wrestling guys. WrestleMania, now 2 days, still going on. They're holding on that they're going to do this event from the WWE Performance Center after it got canceled in Tampa. What are your thoughts on that? Is the WWE making the right decision by keeping this thing going and keeping their weekly shows going?
Well, so two things on that. One, I like the fact that they're doing the weekly shows. I think that's pretty cool. Between AEW and WWE, I've actually found it really, really interesting. You know, if you're into wrestling, there's all sorts of opinions all over the map, whether they like it or not. But I think that's pretty cool, actually. I appreciate them doing that. The WrestleMania one, I'm not going to lie, bothers me a little bit because I don't know how you can pull that kind of mega event off without having hundreds of people sort of working for you, you know, being in that same place. They're obviously not going to have a crowd, but I don't know. I don't know how you pull that. You know, that does not strike me as an event that's going to have 50 or less people, what every single person from the CDC and elsewhere is advising. So I really don't like the optic and the message. So I'm sort of mixed on it. I really like what they're doing week to week, and I hope they continue it. I think it's cool, but WrestleMania just feels like such a big thing that they're not really following the protocols that have been asked. But, you know, it's a private business, and Vince McMahon and company can do what they want. I will say this. I have no doubt it will be massively viewed because I think people will crave – people are craving live anything right now, and that will be a mega, mega live something.
While Dana White and Vince McMahon built empires with their respective sports, it's also not surprising that those two have been like kind of the last ones to kind of conform to everything that's going on, right? I mean, Dana White finally had to give in when he was trying to do the same thing Vince McMahon, is fight it all the way to the end, and it was going to be business as usual, and eventually he had to cave, but they've been great at what they do, but I'm not surprised that those two were kind of the last ones still standing, trying to fight all the way until the end. Richard, we're thinking about you, and I know that you've gone through a tough 2 weeks, and we appreciate you joining us. It was good to catch up again.
Yeah, good to be with you guys. Thanks for doing what you're doing. Appreciate it.
Same to you. Richard Deitch from The Athletic. Always good to catch up with him. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McKay, all in our homes, practicing social distancing. Elijah Campbell holding things down at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by Rumble On. We will talk to Trey Wingo coming up to kick off the second hour of the program. You just made the list at high noon. Linda Cohn in the fourth and final hour. There was a lot of things. Imagine that. I know this always gets Chase very excited. A lot of things that happened after we got off the air yesterday. He loves when news breaks after 2 o'clock. And there was some news yesterday. Finally, some news became official. Tom Brady put it out there. He was the one to put it out there that, hey, I've signed a deal with the Bucks, so that the worst-kept secret has actually happened. But we talked about Todd Gurley and that situation yesterday with the Rams. And from the time we were off the air until we were back on the air, Todd Gurley already has a new home. Todd Gurley's staying in the NFC, but he's now a member of the Falcons. We talked to Chris Domino yesterday.
Not surprising.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. We talked to Chris Domino yesterday, and in a matter of a show, Todd Gurley's on the Falcons. What do you guys think?
He's back in Georgia. I mean, that was the easiest dot to connect because the Falcons had a need at that position. I think people look at Todd Gurley, and we talked about this yesterday, he's definitely not the same Todd Gurley, but there's still something left in the tank. And for, you know, the deal, I think it's a one-year deal that they got him on, it makes sense. So we'll see what he can do. I mean, the NFC South is going to be a lot of fun to watch with all of the storylines surrounding those four teams. Obviously, the biggest one being Tom Brady to Tampa. But you got Breeze coming back for one more run in New Orleans. Atlanta had something to say about it by bringing in Gurley.
You know what's interesting?
to me, guys, is I think we grasped it to a degree yesterday when we were talking about the contract that was there with Gurley, and they were clearly shopping him around. But within a couple hours of our discussion, they determined who's kidding who. Nobody is going to offer anything for this guy, so we've got to cut him. How about that?
Yeah.
That was pretty striking that a guy that good, and that was our conversation in terms of what to offer and how to structure the Derrick Henry contract. We all agree that they need Derrick Henry. They're going to have him on the team. But how they structure the contract is going to be important because basically the Rams, they have absorbed a $12.5 million hit to their salary cap, and they thought that was the best way to go about it, rather than keep him on the team.
I know.
Isn't that amazing? Does that say about how a guy's stock drops in what, 2 years since they signed him to that deal?
Willie, is it any different than what the Dolphins did this time last year with the Tennessee Titans? I mean, they basically just said, here, we're just going to pay him, but can you just take him? That's essentially what happened. It's kind of like in the movie Moneyball. Remember the conversation, Billy Beane, with David Justice? Like, what does it say to me that you're – what does it say to you that your old team is paying me to take you? Right?
Right.
It's essentially, yeah. That's what's happening. Like, the Rams, to your point, is they are willing – I mean, this is like a no-brainer for the Falcons, and we actually talked about this yesterday, that if Todd Gurley was going to be on the move, it would make sense – for him to go to that division. We just didn't say the Falcons. We said, which, right, Tom Brady, that would make sense. If you got all those weapons, the last thing they need to kind of complete the puzzle in Tampa on offense is they need that stud running back, which, you know, who knows what Todd Gurley is. Is he still a stud? I don't know. We're about to find out in Atlanta, but we thought it would make sense for him to be with the Bucs because of Tom Brady and everything that they have. But they don't have – that bell cow. They don't have that number one elite running back. Instead, he goes to the Falcons, and it's a no-brainer for the Falcons. Devontae Freeman is out of the mix. They have moved on from him. And as you mentioned, Willie, the Rams are basically paying him to play this season. And whatever the Falcons give him is just added money. It's just like Tannehill here. Whatever the Titans were willing to throw into the kitty was just a bonus. And so it's a one-year deal, just like here with Tannehill. And can you imagine if Todd Gurley gets anywhere close to old form? Like, it's just like here. Like, how dumb do the Dolphins feel today and look? Although, you know, if they get their next franchise quarterback, maybe it was worth it for them to absolutely stink last year if they get Tua or how it plays out.
Because Tannehill wasn't the only one they got rid of. I mean, they went through a fire sale. I mean, I know,
right,
Tannehill.
It's almost like they were saying, hey, we are, you know, what we talked about. They were tanking for a franchise quarterback. Right, we are throwing it in to try to get the next big thing. But, gosh, if the Rams just pay Gurley to go away after paying him, giving him the monster deal, and then he gets way better with the Falcons, gosh, how bad would that make? Los Angeles is a mess.
Well, to be clear, they've already paid him the money. Right, they're taking the cap hit. They're taking $12.5 million accelerated money against their cap.
I thought
guaranteed
I saw
money.
Where they are going to pay him $7.5 million this year in salary.
How could that be? Because was it a roster bonus or something? I thought
I don't know.
I thought he was due a roster bonus and they cut him.
I thought I saw that the Rams were paying $7.5 million.
Well, because it's not a trade. They released him. So they're not trading him to the Falcons. They released him. So the Falcons, who were not willing to trade for him, signed him immediately, right? I mean, that's how it went down. So now they can build their own deal, which is a much better way to go about it.
So I got it right here. So they cut him before an additional $10.5 million on his contract became guaranteed. That's the only thing I'm seeing, you know, really that was why they went ahead and did it. Because they couldn't trade him to save that $10.5 million. I'm not seeing anything about a $7 million.
I don't know where I saw that yesterday. I'm scanning through.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, so here you go. LA still owns Gurley a $7.55 million roster bonus for this season. A shade over $2.5 million of the deal is subject to offsets. That's his deal with the Falcons. So, yeah, there it is. It's a roster bonus.
Wow. So, does it say anything about
the
accelerated cap hit?
For $2.5 million. That's all they're on the hook for Gurley and his services this year. $2.5 million?
Of that, yeah. I haven't seen the full terms of the contract.
But he's getting $7.5 million from the Rams, $2.5 million
yeah.
from the Falcons, so he's got $10 million this year. Okay.
Yep.
Wow. It's a no-brainer for the Falcons.
It's good to be Todd Gurley. By the way, did you guys see his tweet? His tweet yesterday? It was fantastic. He said, "Damn, I got fired on my day off." Nice reference to Friday.
Nice.
I thought that was good.
And my guess is he probably, you know, is thrilled to be going back to the state of Georgia. I would think.
He's a hero. I mean, like, you know, I think if you're the Falcons and Falcons fans, you see everything going on with, you know, Teddy B going to Carolina, and they got a new coach, and they're kind of having a new start. Obviously, TB12 going to Tampa. They're sitting there going, "What are we doing? You know, what are we doing here in Atlanta?" And even though he's not the same Todd Gurley that he was 2 years ago, I still think that that gives a little juice to those Falcons fans, and you know that are also
tickets.
Georgia Bulldogs. Oh yeah,
make no mistake about it. He will sell tickets for the Falcons. There's no doubt about it.
Well, here's another angle too that I saw. What does it say about Bill O'Brien's read of the situation, where if he just waited a couple days, he could have made a run at Todd Gurley at a pretty good bargain price, as you've just illustrated, rather than trade for David Johnson?
It says that he's a lousy, lousy general manager.
I mean, it's just another reason to pile on him. He's going to take another wave of heat just for that part of it.
He is turning out. He's getting dangerously close, and I know it's still early. He's got more things to do, like more big missteps to make as a general manager. He's going to give Ryan Grigson a run for his money if he keeps this up. He really is.
Ryan Grigson.
Right, when you are compared to him, that's when you've reached rock bottom. And he's dangerously close.
So now let's bring it back to John Robinson. You're sitting there watching all this go down. And you've got to come. You're still in this. We've got to come up with a deal for Derrick Henry. So what goes through your mind? I don't know if it changes anything, but it also illustrates. You know, it's a tricky situation when you've got a great player, but the running back is such a tough one to read over the next 2 or 3 years. The trajectory of his career could go a lot of different ways. We don't think it'll be this year, but you got to think 2 or 3 years down the road when you're the GM.
Yeah, but Bill O'Brien has not done that.
No, definitely not. But John Robinson will. But that's what I'm getting at is this is going to be a very difficult, carefully done negotiation because of all of this stuff on top of you don't want to have a guy not feeling good about his team and the situation the longer this goes. You know, you don't want it to go into training camp and all this stuff when you have the franchise tag. They have to address it. They will. But it's not going to be an easy negotiation at all.
No. But we knew that, right? We knew this was going to be very, very tricky. I don't know if it's changed anything or not. I just know that this is an incredibly tough decision, and it would not be a tough decision if it were not for the landscape of the running back position and all the failed experiments that we've talked about. Because
you just said it. The Rams are going to get stung by this. Right?
Oh my gosh.
They take a hit. They're in salary cap trouble, right? And they knew they were going to be. They went for it when they paid big money to Aaron Donald. They invested in Gurley. They traded for Jalen Ramsey. You know that.
They
so they don't
for
have a
Talib.
Didn't they have Ogletree on a big contract at one time?
Yeah. So are they just? Are they clearing the decks? Are they doing a sort of a version of what Floyd Reese had to do years and years ago, the boom and bust model here? Or is this just doing what they got to do to survive? I don't even know what their thing is. This is what you want to avoid down the road if you're John
Robinson.
They have
no draft picks either. They've given away all their first-round picks.
Yep.
They have no first-round picks. They haven't had first-round picks. It all started with what they did to get Jared Goff. And look, you could say, because we've talked about this, right, if you get the big prize and they were just short of the big prize, then all the missteps after that and all the mistakes after that and the sins that you have to pay after that, a lot of times are forgiven. If you win the Super Bowl 2 years ago, then you know, it's probably all forgiven. But now you didn't. You got there, but you lost. And now you, it looks like you're going to be, you're going the wrong direction. And you're going way, they don't have a first round pick this year. I don't think they have a first
gamble,
round
Darren.
Pick next year.
That's the gamble. I mean, what do you, you know, and it's obviously a different time, but with the Titans back in the early days, I mean, they built from within. They gave out some good contracts, went to a Super Bowl, lost the Super Bowl, and then Floyd was faced with the decision of, okay, now I have to start all over. And that's just the price of doing business. The Rams did the same thing. They went for it. It almost worked. Got to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's nothing to hang your head at.
They went for it the year after they went to the Super Bowl,
yes,
for Ramsey.
Again.
Yeah.
And
Ramsey.
They didn't make the playoffs. And
yeah,
now,
right.
Now they're paying Ramsey all that money, and they've given up all those resources, and they're having to cut guys like Gurley.
They're a mess. They're an absolute mess.
They got
mess.
Trouble.
Huge trouble.
Then that's what I think, the crystal ball. This is as best you can. John Robinson wants to try to measure all of these things. And that might be why you make a move like you did with Jarrell Casey, right? Knowing that the best amount of flexibility you can keep for yourself is hugely beneficial when you get into situations like this.
Anthony Edwards has told Georgia, speaking of Georgia, that he is going to enter the NBA draft. So that just coming across the wire. We'll come back.
The Bucks are going to raise season ticket prices. I just saw that report.
Okay. They're in demand.
Why would that be?
But that's what I talked about. That was part of my the big picture. Tim Hasselbeck's brought up the business side of things. It's good for business to be in the business of Tom Brady.
It's good for business, but in the in the atmosphere of things where people are. I mean, I don't know if this is the best day to announce that.
Probably.
Well,
not.
It's a report. I don't know if they've officially announced it, but I just saw that on the ticker.
All right, we'll come back. Trey Wingo on the other side. Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.